Blog Talk Radio.
The information discussed during the show is not intended to diagnose, treat, prevent, or cure any condition. If your pet is currently experiencing any medical issues, please seek immediate assistance from a licensed veterinarian.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you very much for listening. This is Dr. O'Sullivan from Holistic Veterinary Care and Acupuncture Center. You're currently listening to Holistic Pet Care with Dr. O. And I'd like to encourage everyone who's listening to call in and participate in today's show, which is so important, at 347-215-6138, and I'll pass you right through with your question. Or you can email us at the blogtalkradio@sylviaglobal.com. Send us your questions and we'll get those on the air as well. So this morning we have an extremely important topic that's going to hopefully be a little bit fun as well, and I hope everyone that's listening shares this with their neighbors, shares with their friends, shares it with their animal-loving organizations in their town, because this is a big one. We're lucky enough today to have Karen Goldstein. She's the assistant team leader of animal disaster services here in our area of town, in Prescott Valley and the surrounding areas here in Arizona. And luckily, Animal Disaster Services exists here because we have had our fair share of disasters in the last year, huh? Thank you, Karen, for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me today.
You've been involved with Animal Disaster Services in town or this area for how long, Karen?
I started with the Indian Fire in 2002.
Oh, so it's been a while. It's been a while.
Yes, it has.
Is fire our biggest problem here with regard to needing animal disaster services?
Yeah, fire is one of the biggest. We also do have flooding concerns in several parts of the county and in the state.
All right. So fire and flood are our two big nemesis, huh?
Yeah. I would say.
I've only been in town here, I guess, in this area for a couple of years, and so the biggest one in my memory by far was over the summer, this last summer, with the Dulce Fire, then the Yarnell Fire, and then the disaster on June 30th, correct me if I'm wrong with my dates there, when our community lost 19 hotshots from Prescott, Arizona. In one fell, you know, change of the wind or whatever possibly happened out there. But that was not only a disaster for the communities that were threatened by fire, but all of our surrounding areas really coming together in these, it was actually weeks and months of helping each other out. So the Animal Disaster Services, I guess, was called on to quite a degree during that period of time, because my memory is, it wouldn't stop. It just, these fires just wouldn't stop. And can you kind of give us your take on how you see when a fire starts in the area, not only for your own life, your own property, your own animals, but then your responsibilities with Animal Disaster Services?
Well, okay, hopefully I can answer this question the way that you need it answered. People are directly responsible for... People are responsible for themselves and for getting their animals out of harm's way during a disaster. And mm-hmm. I think that the Yarnell Hill Fire really probably woke a lot of people out of complacency and made them realize that this is something to take very seriously. Of course, if you've never been involved in a disaster or an evacuation, you really don't know just how much in you need to be ready. And when something like this, such a huge scale catastrophe occurs, mm-hmm. it does help get people to wake up. So that is a real good positive about it. We actually have been working lots of disasters since the Indian Fire in 2002 and the Gladiator Fire, the Lane 2 Fire, more fires than I can tell you. We had the Dose Fire, which was right before the Yarnell Hill Fire.
Right.
The interesting thing is a lot of times, and if you'll note, the Dose Fire and the Arnell Hill Fire were not in the forest. They weren't in the Prescott National Forest. And
nope.
We've always heard people say, oh, well, you know, we're not really in a disaster area. You know, we're not in the woods. But as people got to see, you know, these things can happen anywhere. So it's important to know what is going to be a problem in your area and take measures to prepare for it.
Now, Animal Disaster Services, it assists people with so many things with regard to the housing or care for the animals, or the I know that there was a lot of transport, you know, and temporary shelter and those types of things. And like you said, these times of this, darn disaster, that it really just kept going. I mean, and goodness gracious, the amount of resources and time and effort that went into every aspect of, you know, taking care of your pets. Now, I was personally involved with a like organization in a different state, and that organization, it was, Homeland Security type organization, where when a disaster strikes, what are the protocols here? And with regard to the veterinary presence, and the thought process in that organization was people only, people only, people first. And I have to be honest with you that in these meetings, I just raised my hand and I said, that's just not reality. It's not reality. No, I mean, I'm not leaving my pets. I'm not leaving my family. I'm just, that's not going to happen. So we, you know, we need to think of another way to educate or inform people as to what to do. And when I was reading up on Animal Disaster Services, one of the big things on this is do not leave home without them. You know, we're not going to go. We're not going to leave them here to just fight it themselves. Or, you know, I know we have some large animal evacuation procedures we can talk about that if we can't take them with immediately. But the difference in mentality, the difference in approach to animals and our pets and our loved ones from state to state, community to community, is so different. And it's just so refreshing where everything, the first line in everything for Animal Disaster Services, do not leave home without them and be ready. So that's really powerful. Have you run up against any kind of, anybody who had a different mentality than don't leave them behind? Folks that were maybe not so willing to, you know, risk or just go and not go back and get them, or those types of things, or like you said, not be prepared.
Well, there's a little bit of both of that. Now, the unique thing, and I'll backtrack just a little bit, was that post-Katrina, the attitude has really changed. That really put the need to have some sort of sheltering capacity for animals in place, that because we saw that people do not want to leave home without their pets, or people would try to get back into areas affected by hurricanes or flooding or fires and then risk injury to themselves and possibly even get killed trying to do that. So the neat thing about Animal Disaster Services is it was formed in 1999, which was before Katrina. So it was a very progressive kind of action for the animal welfare groups in this area to take, and it was Nick Angelillo, who used to be the director of Yavapai County Emergency Management, along with some animal lovers. One in particular was Leia Camus, who actually put this together. So prior to that, yeah, you know, you were kind of on your own. Nobody really had any clue. A lot of times people think the firefighters will go in and rescue their pets for them, and people put their little please evacuate our pet stickers on their doors, and that's fine for an individual house fire, but in a large-scale fire or evacuation, the animals are not necessarily the priority for the people who are the responding to the disaster. Their priority is to stop the fire or mitigate anything like that, the flooding, put sandbags up, things like that. So,
right.
Yeah, so people now, we more so in more recent history, I think people are very, very fond of their animals. You still run into people who don't particularly care about what happens with their pets, and they may just think that their artwork is more important or whatever, and, you know, they don't try to get them out. But I think, by and large, most people value their pets as part of the family, and they're very happy to have a place to bring them, and they're very happy to get the instructions that we give them and how to come up with good evacuation plans that include their pets.
Right. Now, so as you know, as being involved with me enough, that I am a staunch believer that we are, as people, owners, or ethical beings, ultimately responsible for our pets, ultimately responsible. And nobody else is going to do it. And the thing is, if we decide to take on that responsibility, whether it's food, supplements, environment, exercise, all of it, this is by far one of the most important things. And like you pointed out, kind of got maybe put on the back burner or saying, you know, we need a wake-up call in order to put this on the front of our priority list. But how do we do this? So I applaud you to everybody who's involved in this organization. Now, how is it that you, your organization, educates, informs folks prior to the disaster? Do you have town hall meetings, or what do you guys do?
Well, we're available to speak to any group, any organization. We're happy to go into schools and give little presentations to children in schools. What I've done a whole lot and what a lot of the other members of our group do is we go to FireWise meetings. We go to areas that are determined to be at risk for specific disasters. And then we just tell them, okay, here's what you need to do. You need to get together go kits with your animal's food, with any other medication. You need to have an adequate number of carriers. You need to have their immunization records. You need to have some basic veterinary information. Do they have any allergies? We encourage people to do little mock evacuations in their household.
Right.
Very important.
Right.
Very important to practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because I will tell you, it will take a lot longer than you think it's going to take. But if you get it down, and that way you're calm, so you're not going to panic. Because if you try to, you know, your animals are going to be very keen on knowing if you're panicking, it's going to make things 10 times more difficult.
Indeed. And the thing is, I remember growing up, I grew up in Southern California, and we used to do practice evacuations for fires. You know, just like whether it was a ladder out the window or this is the route to take and get out and be on the sidewalk by the car. And I remember my dad used to time us. And unfortunately, our evacuations would start with like an air horn in the middle of the night. So that kind of shocked you right the heck out of bed. But the evacuations it's so important with the preparedness. Now, the website that I want to give to our listeners that I found this on, if you go to even Google and you look up Animal Disaster Services, it will come up. One of the first ones for Yavapai County is United Animal Friends. And United Animal Friends has got a very, very nice website where they give all of this information about public service announcement video, the Interface Commission for Wildlands and Urban, the ADS brochures, evacuation preparedness is what I'm looking at right now, and then large animal evacuation procedures because it's so different. It's just so darn different. But this brochure and this five-minute notice, just like you were saying, with our medication containers, clothing, toiletries, valuables and mementos in the car, that's the human piece of it. Then you get the pet piece, which is the food, meds, water, litter, leashes, carrying cases, and so on and so forth. And we also have a chart in here that says per type of animal, per species, I guess, we have our dogs, our cats, our birds, and our others. And the concentration really seems to be to have at least 1 week of supplies ready to take on a to-go kit for your friends. Now, can you tell us, Karen, with the Dole Sea Fire and the Yarnell Fire, the Animal Disaster Services area, now that was in operation for longer than a week, wasn't it? This is just my memory, that you had people seeking your help for longer period than that. Is that true?
Well, we actually get activated when Yavapai County Emergency Management activates us, and then they tell us where we're going to set the shelter up, and then they tell us when we're going to break the shelter down. So our basic function is just during the duration of the actual disaster. Once homeowners are permitted to go back home, then we work with them, but usually then if they don't have a home to go back to or what have you, they have to make alternative arrangements because we will be deactivated and then we need to pack up and go home. But yeah, we did about 53 animals during the Dose Fire, and then I don't think we even had a week before the Yarnell Hill Fire started.
Yep.
And that
That's right. We
set up the shelter on the 30th of June and we broke the shelter down on Tuesday the 9th of July. And we had about 53, I think I said, animals for the Dose Fire. And then we had pretty close to 100 animals for the Yarnell Hill Fire. And that was just us. There were actually lots of different groups involved in the Yarnell Hill Fire, so I don't want to confuse anybody. But there were several shelters set up during that one. And some were in Peoples Valley, some were down in Wickenburg, the Arizona Humane Society was set up. So there was a lot, there are a lot of resources available, but the biggest thing people need to remember, and you hit on it, is to be prepared and to have a plan and to get out there. But I want to raise one concern that I have, and that is people need to actually include having a buddy system for their pets in case something breaks out really close to their home and it's very fast moving and they don't have time to get back and get their pets themselves. They need to have neighbors or friends or somebody that lives near to them that know their animals. We call it a buddy plan for your for your buddies. So that's another big thing.
That's so important. My God, that's so important. Is it because some people, I mean, me included, right, might not even know your neighbors, depending on where you're living, or feel comfortable enough with your neighbors to give them a key or introduce them to your pets or say, here's my numbers if something goes wrong or here's the things that are most valuable to me, please take care of them.
Yeah.
I mean, my gosh, you know, that's enlightening. It's really quite important. Now, how do you just approach your neighbors by knocking on the door and saying, hey, would you like to come to an ADS meeting? Or, hey, would you like to be my pet? Or just, it might be a good time to bring a casserole and a dog leash over or something like that and just say, hi, my name is so-and-so. I live next door to you, and I'm trying to be proactive. Or how do you approach people with that? Just say, just get out and do it. It's important? Or what do you say?
Well, in our community, we are a FireWise community, and we also have a homeowners association. And I first presented the concept to the homeowners ice cream social. And I just also had them put it in the homeowner newsletter and just said, you know, it's important to reach out. Yes, you know, you do want people who are trustworthy to be giving out your information for, but the way that we do it is we'll have the phone numbers that we always carry with us of the people who are going to be the ones that are going to help us with our evacuation. During the Dose Fire initially, it looked like we might actually be evacuated because the fire it was started pretty close to where we are actually located. So immediately I had people on my list, so I would call them and say, look, there is a fire. It is nearby. We do not know if it's going to come this way or not, but you might want to get back. Can you get back? Are you in Phoenix for the day? Are you in Flagstaff for the day? Are you going to need our help to go and get your animals, okay? And these are people that I know personally, that I know their animals because I've gone ahead and made those relationships with them. So it's important It's important to do it ahead of time. And I actually, you know, alerted several people to the fact that there was a fire, and yes, they were all able to get back so that they could be there and be ready just in case. As we all know, the Dose fire, the wind was a big factor, and it pushed the fire away from our particular neighborhood. But it spread quite rapidly, and it did catch a lot of people off guard, as did the Yarnell Hill fire.
The
There's no guarantee with forest fires.
Oh, and like you pointed out in the beginning, this wasn't a classic forest fire. And I remember looking out my front door and just looking to the left and like, I'm like, oh, my gosh, what the heck is going on? And that was hour to hour to hour. With the wind changing, or you could feel, you know, you could just, you could feel it moving. And with the folks that are evacuating and with the road closures, like the immediacy and the, how the roads would get cut off, or that they, I know that the folks that evacuated people say, you know, you need to get out of this area. And I personally know a couple, half dozen folks that were just like, no, you know, it's not even around here. We'll be fine. Don't even worry about it. And boy, were they caught off guard, just like you're saying here. And I mean, does it look like it was going this way, or like the news says something, or you look out the window and the wind's blowing the other way, you're like, no, it's fine. And then as Yarnell proved, unfortunately, that anything can happen, even with the most prepared, most experienced, most educated folks, that we don't muck around with Mother Nature. You know, she's going to do
whatever
she wants, and very, very quickly. So
that's right. And you know what else I tell people in my presentations is, if there's a fire and it's kind of close and you think there's a good possibility you might be evacuated, and you've got 40 cats and 10 horses and you've got goats and you've got chickens and you've got this and that, load up and go. Just load up and go. At the worst, you know, or not the worst, but maybe it's just a good drill for you that way, and you just load up and you move everybody out of the way. But in some areas, your evacuation roads, there might be two, okay? And if you've got 600 residents in there and they're all trying to get horse trailers out, or, you know, there's pandemonium and this fire's coming at you at 45 miles an hour, it's a lot better to be out of the way, and it's better for the people who are trying to respond to the disaster, too. All part of being prepared and getting your plan together so that you're not going to panic and you're not going to have problems or create problems or be a problem, you know, for the emergency responders. It's up to us. Disaster evacuation can only go as smoothly as the people who are being evacuated make it.
Right. Now it's this is all so important. I'm so glad you're here, Karen. The evacuation preparedness. Now, for our dog and cat people, I, to some degree, maybe we don't think about our large animals, our farm animals, those types of things, just like you were saying. And since I'm now a proud owner of chickens and have my friends that have our horses and our goats and such, I think you have the large animal evacuation procedures and the barn procedures and such on this website. Now, can you go over the large animal evacuation thought process? Because it does take longer, and especially like you said, when we're nervous, our animals are nervous. And trying to tell my dog to get in the car anyway is one thing. Trying to load my horse when I'm freaked out and there's smoke in the air is a totally different ball game. I mean, I don't know if my listeners have horses or have farm animals that don't respond well to being stressed, or don't run on a leash, or don't load very well into the back of your van because it's never happened before, or if you've ever tried to chase a chicken around and you're stressed out, it's not a fun thing. So you have a couple minutes to go over a little bit of the farm animal or large animal evacuation stuff with us, Karen, because it's important.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah,
well, at the time of the Dose fire, I was responsible for 7 horses. I had 4 on site at my house, and I had 3 that I was responsible for, some neighbors who were not going to be able to make it back in time. I had already told them, the neighbors, to have a horse trailer and a pickup truck ready. Unfortunately, at the time, they did not have either ready. So I happened to know some neighbors that I called immediately and got 3 different horse trailers hooked up to 3 different pickup trucks. I got halters on the horses. They were bought in from their turnouts into the barn. They weren't necessarily locked into their stalls, but they were in areas where that was easily they would be easily caught. And we would employ the use of treats, absolutely. You know, if horses like carrots or most of these little animals, you know, they like a little treat, or you can get some grain in a little feed bucket and shake that little feed bucket and you have their halter on. Exactly. And then you know, you want to catch a chicken, throw down some feed, and then just get the little chicken and put them in a crate. You know, get your crates together for the smaller ones. Get your horse trailer ready, and don't be afraid to use the treats, and don't be afraid to take nice deep breaths. But horses and a lot of animals, you can practice loading them. If you do have some that are a little bit difficult to load, there are certain techniques that most people who have these animals can employ. It wouldn't be a bad idea to get a couple of neighbors that could give you a hand. As I said, that's part of the plan. Sometimes you need to push from behind and pull in the front. So if you've practiced it,
practice. So buddy system, practice is what I'm hearing here with all of our friends. And
get out early.
Yes. I'm so sorry. That's quintessentially important, isn't it? Getting the heck out. And not only get out to safety, but get out of the way. Like you said, the first responders trying to come in, everybody else deciding, oh, crap, I got to go, and clogging up the roadways. And as you pointed out, in many places, there's only one road out, or maybe two roads out. And so some of the things that were pointed out on the animal evacuation procedures were, first of all, if you can, identify your animals with a key tag or something on a halter, name, address, and phone, or even, painting latex paint on our hips of our animals. But the 3-inch cut lead ropes on these guys, depending on what kind of animal they are, just so you can get them back up pretty quickly, you know, whether you have a long lead rope on them or just a 3 or 6-inch lead rope hanging down so you can, you know, gather them up without having to get close enough to clip them or having a long lead rope that might, you know, get tangled up in their legs and such. There's so many great ideas on here. And the loading and transporting animals and having your trucks and trailers or just your vehicles pointed out. I read that 4 times on here, that when our trucks and trailers are loaded, or not so loaded, but hooked up, make sure that they're pointing in the out direction, because for
That's
those
right.
of you who have driven trucks and trailers, or those of you who haven't, it can be a time-consuming proposition to turn these things around, especially if they're loaded down, especially if they're in a tight area, or especially if you're in traffic, or your stress level might be through the roof. So having your vehicle pointed out, it may seem like such a minor thing, but for those of us that have actually driven these things, it's not. Get it ready before you load it, and it is. It's profound. These suggestions in here are just wonderful. I kept shaking my head as I'm reading this, going, "Yeah, that would help. Yeah."
And make sure that your tires are properly inflated. Make sure that you check the condition of the flooring of your trailers. You don't want nervous animals to kick through trailers, and you want to make sure that your tires are okay. During the Yarnell Hill fire, when we went to get our trailer with all our gear in it, one of our tires were flat. So that took an extra couple of minutes, which didn't turn out to be that big a deal because it obviously took people a while to get from Yarnell, but up to Prescott, but it is a good idea to make sure that everything is maintained and practice backing your truck up to your trailer and attaching your trailer and connecting all the things that need to be connected, because it's not something that you do on a regular basis, then you need to be familiar with doing it and make sure that you can just do it very quickly.
Yeah, you don't want that to be your limiting factor. You know, it's one of the things you have to have done first. And God forbid, you know, if you're by yourself trying to get ready for your buddies to show up, or if God forbid you're by yourself and have to do this, backing that truck and trailer up with experience, we're not going anywhere until that gets done. So
that's right.
Just practice with these things. And it's not like it's not going to be valuable to you for non-emergency situations, it's a skill to be able to back that ball and hitch right up there, or that gooseneck and slide it on all by yourself. It's a wonderful thing to be able to do.
That's right. It makes you much more confident.
Yes.
And the other thing to keep in mind for people is make sure that your area around your barn and around your home is trimmed back. Make sure that you have hoses on all the faucets, all with high-powered sprayers on the end of those, and then go on to the websites to find out how to prepare your homes. Now, you mentioned something earlier, Dr. O, that was important. We do have some feral cats at our house and some barn cats,
mm-hmm.
and people sometimes, if you have animals that you are not going to be able to catch, you've got a wall of flames coming at you, you basically have to grab who you can grab, and then you are going to have to leave some animals behind.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to try to provide them with water, and if you've gotten your area trimmed back and you've gotten your firewise planning is good, your plants around your home are trimmed the way they should be, then there's a good possibility that your structures will survive and that your animals that are left behind will survive, and then they can contact us with the information such as their address and the types of animals that they've left behind and where they might be hiding. And then we can either go back in, or actually we have not been officially trained yet to go back in, but say in the Yarnell Hill fire, there were veterinarians that went in. There are people from the Arizona Humane Society that went in, and they went to these locations, and they put food and water out, you know, for
yes.
the animals. And
right.
they went back in, and they did rescue animals out that they could get out. You know, some of them, you know, they weren't able to catch, they weren't able to locate. Outdoor cats are notoriously difficult to get a hold of. But because of people, you know, keeping their areas trimmed back and having a safer place for their animals to ride it out, a lot of animals were able to survive even through that disaster, and then we could go back later on and get them out. And then in the case of horses, people sometimes will have no other choice but to turn the horses loose, or the large animals, excuse me. And the purpose
right.
of the shorter lead rope is if you do have to turn them loose, you've got a breakaway halter, and
right.
you've got your lead rope on them. And another suggestion is to take some markers and to write your phone number, your cell number in really big letters on them, or somehow or another a body marking on them to where
right.
When they can call you and then you can round your animal up. This is
right.
obviously a last resort.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. But the idea that it is being addressed, and that I can't even conceive of the amount of guilt that would go into leaving one of your own behind. I mean, I can't
mm-hmm.
even conceive it. But doing the best you can, not only to make sure that they can take better care of themselves being loose and having, like you said, a fire-wise area, lots of water, you know, if you can, and, you know, big buckets or their troughs or the area being, you know, whether it's sprinkled down or wet down, those types of things. And being able to collect them up, you know, when somebody, who knows how far they'll go, or if somebody sees them, having identifying marks on them can be so important. And I don't mean to bring up quite a bad memory, but as we all probably remember in 9/11, all of our rescue workers, human and dog, which I dealt with a bunch of the dogs that worked on the 9/11 disaster, that they had indelible markers on their arms with their Social Security numbers, and these dogs had not only their markings on their collars, but they had also shaved the spots and indelible markered on the dogs how, you know, where these dogs belong, because you just didn't know. You don't know what's going to happen, even if you go in intentionally. So having identifying marks on your friends, so that when time comes and a stranger finds them, that they'll come back to you safely. It may seem like above and beyond, but it's just in that moment, before and the time after a disaster when you're beside yourself, or there's that, you know, the guilt component of where the heck is my family member, giving them the best chance to come home. It's so important to think about. The evacuation preparedness 5-minute notice also brings up, place a white object on your front door so that authorities know that you've evacuated. I just think that that's brilliant. It saves so much time for the first responders and let everyone know that you guys are on your way to safety. Am I interpreting that correctly, Karen?
Yes, and if you have a very large property and your front door is not visible from the roadway, then try
mm-hmm.
to attach it to a gate or to a tree right at the bottom of your driveway. You know, that again will save that'll save time for people. And if you need help, it has been suggested in some of the literature that I've read, it's not on our literature, that you would somehow put up a cardboard sign or something that, you know, said need help or what have you. But obviously during a fire that may not still be there if it burns. But, you know, it's just there's a lot of different – you can go online and you can go to the Red Cross site and you can go to the FEMA sites. There's a whole lot of information online, but definitely – if you can, get a white towel or a white sheet or even a white T-shirt and tie it to where the first responders can see. They may or may not have time to go through a house by house, banging on doors.
Right.
Sometimes they just go up and down the road with a megaphone. We're down in kind of a hole here, so we always try to get up to the top of the hill so we can see what's going on. But when you see the big DC-10s flying over your head, just barely missing the treetops by your house, you probably know that they're getting low because they're going to be dumping that retardant on a flame, and that's probably pretty close to your house. So,
indicator. You might not want to be there. okay,
right,
so
exactly. You may not want to be there. You definitely want to be paying attention.
Yeah, because this is if you're kind of deaf to the wake up calls, that would be a real loud one.
Right.
I want to remind our listeners today to give us a call 347-215-6138 to ask Karen any questions about this amazingly important topic. And that for our podcast listeners, send an email to listeners@sylviaglobal.com and we'll get your question on the air for Karen or for myself, because this is a very rare opportunity for what's amazingly valuable information. And for those of you that haven't been in a disaster situation, whether it's fire, flood, and a couple of the horrible things that can be happening in different areas of the country, this is very important information, and it may seem like it's not my problem or it's not for today, or as Karen pointed out so well, that I don't live in that area. I don't have to worry about that. Don't kid yourself. Do not kid yourself. This, so far, you know, I've had a 45-year life where I only had my head on straight for a very short period of that time, and my family's house was in the Southern California fires, and, you know, when San Diego and lost quite a bit. And then out here, so far, the Dosi fires, the Arnell fires, and then losing, as I pointed out before, losing the hot shots. If you're not awake and you don't think that you're impacted by this, whether it's your house, your neighborhood, you're not involved, you are. You just are. As a community or somebody that needs to help and somebody that's listening to this show, you know you want to get involved. So actually, speaking of which, Karen, we have a question for you, okay? One of the callers is asking, how do people set up, an organization like ADS in their community? Or I guess, how do you find an organization like ADS in your community? But I think the setup piece is important as well, because maybe there are places that just don't have something like this. What do you think?
I'm pretty sure that there probably are areas that do not have something like that set up yet. Some Red Cross shelters do allow pets at their shelters. You might want to check with the local Red Cross. You may want to check with the Office of Emergency Management in your area. You may want to check with your animal control and or the livestock inspection people, the state veterinary board. There are several, those are several different sources. Ours was formed through Yavapai County Emergency Management in partnership with just some concerned animal lovers in the area. And so you, that should help you out.
Well, and you said that there were two individuals, like you just pointed out, that really kind of spearheaded this thing in 1999 or possibly before that, because it takes a long time to get these things up and running. But I do know with state organizations, the, in this case, the Arizona Veterinary Medical Examiners Board, there is a veterinary medical board in every state, and that they have unbelievable resources and to allow information to flow and to get people into contact with others. And I can imagine that this was quite a quite an undertaking to start from the ground up to get something this wonderful and this well structured to fruition, you know, where you're actually out doing it and being able to be on a show like this or being able to be a first responder and to change lives. So I've got nothing but kudos for everybody, everybody that's involved in the animal disaster services. I do know that with some of the shelters and some of the other organizations that they will, as Karen said, allow temporary housing. And as we pointed out in every show here, everybody does the best they can in the circumstances and situations that they're in. And some people just handle a little bit more smoothly and a little bit more organized fashion. So I think in reading about the ADS and Animal Disaster Services, that that's a big part of your program as well, isn't it? Training people that are involved in animal disaster services. Is that true? Did I read that correctly?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we are. We just had a class at our meeting this last Saturday on working with exotic animals. In November, we had a class on, we called it Horse 101 and Barnyard Basics, talking about llamas, alpacas, goats, sheep, pigs, various sort of animals that we are going to take care of. We'll work on, we've got some people coming to give us a little presentation about taking care of different kinds of birds. We'll have animal control people come and talk to us about how safe handling. We have people who are interested in training to go into areas to help people evacuate their animals and to go in and be part of the teams that go in after the disaster has gone through but before it's safe for the general public to go in. And we are going to have a class on recognizing symptoms of diseases, first aid. You know, animals could come to us that are burned or suffering from smoke inhalation or possibly have other health concerns. And so we're constantly training amongst ourselves and getting experts in their field to come in and give us presentations. And we also do, we do drills every year where we will basically set up an evacuation site. And this year we're planning on doing a really big one. We're going to hopefully videotape it and then have that on our webpage, our website, which we have not created yet, but we will.
because you'll have your video ready, so you have to have a website.
That's right. That's one of the things that we could put on our website that we haven't gotten together yet, but we intend to. We've got some people who can actually do that for that for us now, so we will get that done soon.
It takes a village, doesn't it, Karen, to get anything done? It's fantastic. I love it. Now, what is your involvement with the Community Emergency Response Team? I read a little bit about that on the site with the Yavapai County Emergency Management regional alerts and such. And it seems like the members assist others by applying the basic response and organizational skills that they learn during training. These skills can help save lives and sustain lives following a disaster until help arrives. And the Community Emergency Response Team skills also apply to daily emergencies. Are you familiar with the CERT program, Karen?
Well, we, during the Dosse Fire and the Arnell Hill Fire, some of the people who had been trained through this particular program, I personally have not received training through this particular program, but they do send them out. They send them out to give us assistance or give any other of the groups that are participating in disaster management a hand with whatever they might need. So they came in and maybe they might help us walk dogs or feed animals or take kitties out of their cages and play with the kitties and that kind of
right.
thing. Or if they have a skill set taking care of livestock or any other type animal, then we definitely, you know, would put them to work wherever they felt comfortable helping us out. But they would always be supervised by one of us.
That's great. So it's another group, another resource of trained
mm-hmm.
hearing individuals that you guys can, you know, use or facilitate to increase the efficiency, like you said, of the post
what we're already doing.
Or during disaster that you guys are already
mm-hmm.
doing. That's great that you guys got these little tiers of people that have different kinds of education, different kinds of resources, different kinds of experience to help in something
right.
like this. So quite an undertaking, my gosh. And then during the, or I guess it was post-fire, I do remember some raccoons, some wildlife, some creatures that were rescued
yep.
after the fire that got helped. And that's a project in and of itself, because I know you need certain skills with that, whether it's a wildlife rescue or management, and then the veterinarian piece of it because of the injuries these little guys suffered and such. So is that something that you guys were involved in as well? With
well,
the wildlife
as it turns out, Dr. Skinner helps
uh-huh.
us, and he actually helps over at the Heritage Park Zoo. So he
right.
has a lot of the wildlife experience, and he was one of the vets, if not the only vet, treating this one little raccoon. That's kind of an interesting point, because I know it doesn't really get mentioned on the news a lot, and I thought it was very interesting because I asked Dr. Skinner about it, and he said during say we'll use the example of a fire. Firefighting efforts are for protecting homes, but at the same time, they also know areas that are very important to wild animals, and they will put a lot of effort into saving those areas as well. And there will be the animal rehab facilities will be notified if there are animals that are injured, say Southwest Wildlife Rehab or Bradshaw Mountain Wildlife Association. If they are able to, they can take in these injured animals and then help to rehabilitate them so they can hopefully be released. This raccoon, the injuries that the raccoon sustained probably won't be able to ever be back in the wild. So they will then be residents of whatever rehab, and in this case, the little raccoon will probably find its home at the Heritage Park Zoo.
Right.
And so there's a lot of effort that goes into place in trying to help out any of the animals that are injured, the wild animals that are injured, and to help preserve areas that are critical to them in any
right.
kind of big fire.
It's so multifaceted, because
mm-hmm.
What you've mentioned with regard to some folks that are, you know, pet owners, pet lovers, or have the dog and the cat, and they go to their veterinarian once a year and those types of things, and that they walk their dog and feed their dog and play with their dog and those types of things, not ever conceiving of not only different kinds of pets, different kinds of situations, different kinds of emergencies, whether it be in their home or in the environment. And then, what the heck am I going to do anyway? I mean, what if this even happens? Because I've never even thought about it. Never even thought about
right.
it. And then we, so far, with your help, we've gone over our dog and our cat, you know, our in-the-house fuzzies, right? And then
mm-hmm.
our farm animals, or outdoor, you know, four-legged friends. And then we have things like birds. Birds are so important. They have extremely sensitive respiratory tracts, and in a fire or a smoke, we have some amazing concerns with them with regard to protecting them, but then with exposure, making sure that they get to the right facilities and the right care to try to get them what they need, which is primarily going to be oxygen and such. But knowing those things and having those maybe on your list of documents and list of caretakers that you have in your to-go kits is very important, not only for you, but for your buddy system. And then like you said, your trucks and your trailers and all lined up and your tires ready and mm-hmm. your evacuation plan. And then I remember with the Yarnell fire, that piece of it is the one that I remember, or maybe it was the Dosey fire, with the amount of horses that had to leave, that there were some private citizens that had like training facilities or areas where they had a lot of paddocks and such already filled up, and they just stepped up. They're like, bring them here, you know, just bring them here. And they would open up these facilities and just say, you know what, nothing else matters. Just get these horses away from that mountain and let's go. And they ended up with all manner of farm animals there, whether it was a goat or it was a pig or it was sheep and such. But the kindness and the open-mindedness and the giving of whatever it is I have to help you and your pets get out of trouble was overwhelming, in my opinion. I thought it was fantastic. It was luckily, maybe unexpectedly wonderful to see all these things happen with these people opening up their hearts and their home. But the information that is given not only by you today at this in the show, but like you said, your kind of wake-up presentations in classes or community organizations or what did you call the for the fire ready meetings or in a community?
Oh, Firewise Homeowners Association meetings. Yeah.
And, yep. if you had something that you wanted to tell the world, which is basically your opportunity here in the next 9 minutes, about your passion for what it is that you do, and this is just part of your life, this thing. It seems so big and it's so important, but it's just part of your life here. But if you had to tell people 2, 4, 6 things that are so damn important to make sure that if, God forbid, this happens to you, that you and your family of all species is as safe as possible, and then maybe take a minute and just tell us what this means to you personally, because that is the focus. So go ahead, Karen. This is your moment with the world. I appreciate it.
Well, there's always room for improvement. I'm pretty proud of Yavapai County and all the practice and all the coordination and all the effort that they put into coming up with the best plans, and they're constantly reevaluating and trying to make it better. And I'm really proud of all the community and how they really do step up and come together. And all the different businesses, the feed stores, right. Cal Ranch, Home Depot, Olson's Grain, everybody comes together and really promotes not only the animals during the day-to-day, but they'll step up and just bring truckloads. What do you need? And they're there with it. You know, fencing, you got it. Food, you got it. Veterinarians, vet techs showing up, walking
right.
through, evaluating animals for us and all of that, you know, so it's really, really good. But none of it matters if people are not ready, if individuals are not ready. So they have to make it a priority and come up with a plan. Now is a good time to come up with a plan and start practicing. We're kind of having a drier, hotter year this year. And
yes, we are.
You know, I've said this before, and then we'll get, you know, our 4.5, 6.5 feet of snow up in the mountains in February and March. But you can never be ready enough. And so just try to think about it. And as you do your practices, you will get, you know, you'll get more and more prepared and make your place ready. That's also another really important thing. And I hope I'm answering your question.
No,
the way you wanted
job.
It, but make sure that yeah, get the fire the FireWise community going in your area.
Yes,
contact your local fire station and have them come out and evaluate your property for you. Where do you need to trim? What do you need to do? Do you need to put different things on your property that you hadn't thought of? And get your neighbors used to have a party, you know, with your little buddy evacuation plan. I've said have a little barbecue at your house or have a cup, have a cup of coffee or something, you know, get to know your neighbors, because, you know, in this day and age, a lot of us, as you said, don't know our neighbors. And, you know, I mean, right. If you don't trust them, then you probably don't want to involve them in your plan. But surely there's somebody around that you can contact. And, you know, people, I pet sit for a living. So I pet sit sometimes out of my area, and I tell the people that I'm pet sitting for, okay, look, if I live 20, 30 minutes away from you and I have my own crew that I've got to take care of, plus I've got 10 other families I'm pet sitting for, if something happens, I might not be able to get to your place to get your animals out. So you still need to have somebody, even if you have a pet sitter, you need to have somebody who your pet sitter can contact that knows your animals, knows where your crates are, knows where your go kit is. And
right.
For me personally, I don't want any people hurt. I don't want any animals hurt. And so my passion is just basically, and a lot of times, you know, people think, oh gosh, you could just get crazy about this, but you know, they're a little resistant because they're thinking, oh, this is never going to happen, or, oh, it'll be okay, I'll handle it. Or people will always tell me, oh, well, we'd always evacuate with our pets. But there's so many things that can happen along the way that can trip you up. And my goal is to make sure that everybody gets out okay. Everybody gets out okay. And then we really, really pay attention and take the time. These first responders, the firefighters, they're putting their lives on the line to save our houses, to save us, and the very least we could do is to make sure that we do our job. We do our job, whatever that job may be. We do every single thing we can in our power to make sure that our place is safe, our place is easy to take care of because we've cleared brush out of our way. We're not holding up a rescue. We're not jeopardizing the lives of first responders because we have messed up because we didn't come up with a plan and we've totally panicked and our minds are blown and now we need help in addition to everything
else
that's going on. So that's
kind of
where my head's at.
Karen, good for you. Your head is like it. Just love it. Now, Karen said some very important things that are big, big issues. First of all, our firefighters and our first responders are risking their lives for your life and their life for your property. Now think about that. I'm going to risk my life and my family, you know, or my history, my future in this world for your property. So when we need to be responsible for not only ourselves, our pets, our family members, and then get the heck out of their way. Get out of their way. You know, just like Karen said in much nicer terms than I just did, get out. Get out right now and do it in an organized, well-rehearsed, well-practiced, great buddy system, great communication, great information. Just even if you're not an organized person, such as myself, do it. Just do it. It's so important. Now, one of the other things that we haven't mentioned that's very important is first aid kits. You can find lists of things that are important for first aid kits, not only on the Animal Disaster Services website that goes through United Animal Friends, but many other places have first aid kit lists, whether they're a natural care dog care book or you go to the Red Cross or you go to an animal care site or go to your veterinarian or go to your shelter and ask them for the contents of a first aid kit because you're going to want that in your to-go kit and you want to have it. And then our disaster preparedness shopping guide, make sure you know what you need for your friends. And then one of the most important things also is to have fire-safe gear. Avoid synthetics, avoid plastics. So there's so much more that we could talk about today, but we're running out of time. So I want to make sure that people do everything they can to either contact a group like Animal Disaster Services in their community, contact Animal Disaster Services here in our community, and ask them with an email so we can make sure everyone gets this information and everyone is safe in the face of a disaster. So, Karen, I can't thank you enough for being on this show. Once again, Karen Goldstein, Assistant Team Leader for the Animal Disaster Services here in town with a ton of experience and information for all of us. Thank you so much, Karen. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you for having me, and I hope it was helpful to your listeners.
Oh, it was. And I'll be talking to you about doing class presentations as soon as the show is over.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, all right, listen, have a wonderful day, and I'll talk to you soon. Once again, thank you very much, Karen.
Okay, take care.
All right. And
for the information discussed during the show is not intended to diagnose, treat, prevent, or cure any condition. If your pet is currently experiencing any medical issues, please seek immediate assistance from a licensed veterinarian.